listeners, and welcome to the Anime Podcast. So today we're going to be talking about factual based thinking and how it affects the world and why we don't get much of it at school. And today I've got myself, James, and I am going under the Jitsi handle of Emmanuel Can't Think. And today we've got Alex. How are you getting on, Alex?
I'm doing okay. I've been up for a surprisingly long amount of time, given how early it is. Early for me. And my Jitsi handle is Rube Me Sideways, which is what rubes love to happen to them, because they do love being conned by sociopaths.
And you are a professional wallet inspector, is that right?
Absolutely. Just hand over about 500 euro and I can inspect your wall.
Yeah, cool. So, yeah, we're going to just get into it. So we're talking about, as I said, the way the public receive and disseminate information on a day-to-day basis. And this is obviously really important at the moment, because with something like COVID has been in the news all of last year, and I imagine it'll probably be in the news for the next couple of years. Same with Brexit. If you see, you know, I don't know how true this was as a fact, but apparently, you know, the day after the Brexit vote had gone through, the number one searched Google question was, what actually is the EU? So people were, you know, at least a sizable chunk of people were suddenly then deciding to do a little bit of research on a question that had been discussed and talked about for about 8 months straight in the UK press. How you receive information, how you read about it, how you think about it, and what you do with it is all very important. And we've basically, as anarchists, have the theory that you have an entire school system, an entire media system that is spent all of its time and energy to ensure that you do not assess this information correctly or in any critical way. So, Alex, why do you think that, say, factual-based thinking or critical thinking is important?
Why is it important? It's like one of those questions that should be so basic that it doesn't even need to be asked, along the lines of, why should you wipe your arse? Why do you need to wash occasionally? These things, having to point out that... Sorry, my dog is now licking me. Polly, go away, go away. It's one of these things that it's almost seems, and maybe this is a kind of a elitist in quotation marks, that it almost seems like such a stupid question, but it is actually very important on a fundamental level. If you don't understand how to process information, or even indeed what information to or what facts to believe or what information to believe, you can't really have any solid opinions or even give any kind of have any understanding how the world works. So, like, and this is not something, as you said, that you learn in school. It's kind of something you have to learn independently of these types of institutions, whether it be high school in Scotland, secondary school in Ireland, or university. They don't really prepare you for that. It's kind of all rote learning and received wisdom, if you will. So I think it's something a lot of people have, maybe innately. They generally don't do well in school if they have it. If you get through university, like I did, and kind of develop it afterwards to some degree, it allows you to view the world the way it is. It allows you to come up with solutions that make sense, rational solutions, as opposed to magical solutions, whether that be a belief that... that there's this secret guy called Q who is really telling the truth about the world, and that we're controlled by cannibal pedophiles, and that Donald Trump, the noted pedophile himself, is somehow going to save us from that. You know, a person who had learned to think rationally would look at that and go, no, that's crazy. But a person who had been taught to some degree to be suspect of kind of officials, kind of be suspect of facts, wouldn't. So basically, it allows you to look at the world as it is and try and come up with solutions or listen to solutions that would actually help the world rather than hinder it.
I wouldn't maybe say that it lets you view the world how it is, because every lens that you're going to use is going to affect how you view it and what you're going to see. So, you know, as we tend to look at things from a materials standpoint, that often, you know, lets us see what's happening on an economic scale. But, you know, that can mean that we miss out social stuff. So I would say that it gives you an ability to construct a reality, but it doesn't mean you're always going to see the full picture.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not to imply that you can ever get a complete view of reality, because you're never going to have all the facts anyway. And that just goes without saying. You just have to try with, you know, the normal level, and again, I use the word normal in quotation marks, level of research that you could do with the time you have. We all have busy lives and got things to do. But with kind of, again, it comes kind of back to the point, I suppose one of the original ideas behind the podcast, this episode of the podcast, was to try and think about the idea of critical thinking, as in that, okay, here's an example. You come across an article online, and there's millions of them, who knows who necessarily created the article, doesn't matter, and it says that, you know, secretly there are space aliens who are lizards who are controlling everything. Now they provide maybe one bit of evidence in that. A person who would employ some degree of rational or critical thinking would look at that and go, okay, well, let me see if there's any other evidence in this article for that, and what is the provenance for that. And if you did that, you'd probably discover, oh, wait, this is batshit crazy stuff put out there by, I don't know, fucking David Irving or some one of these weirdos, or by the Breitbart. And you go, okay, well, that's bullshit. So that's kind of like what I said before, was that this is actually quite a difficult subject, because it's one of the foundations on which we think, not necessarily every anarchist thinks the same way, but it's such a fundamental part of how I would go about accessing information, that it is actually kind of difficult to talk about, because it is just so fundamental to how I think. And it's difficult because you come across people, certainly online, who don't think that way. And it's a bit like trying to communicate with somebody who speaks not only another language, but like something that isn't even rooted in an Indo-European kind of language tree. It would be something way off Japanese, you know?
Okay, so here's a way to look at it then. We both went to higher education, even though I didn't finish my degree because of the politics of the faculty, basically. But you've got...
Sure.
What's that?
Sure.
Well, or maybe I was too much of an independent thinker, Alex. Did you think about that, maybe?
I'm going to post a thing with Jan... What's her name? Jan Brady. Marsha Brady going, sure, Jan.
Yeah, there's nothing quite like doing a degree with a bunch of Blairite apologists when the financial crash happens. That's a really good way to have a completely normal time with your teachers. But yeah, a lot of people that end up going to university, now I don't know how true this is now, but you know, certainly back in 2007, 2008, a lot of people would get to university and would flounder very, very quickly, because they're now not just being asked to just regurgitate information to pass tests. They're now being asked to apply a certain amount of ability to interpret information and go off on their own and find their own facts and evidence and things to back up what they're interested in. And I'm not saying people that do, because the most people that I've met that have gone to university are also complete fucking idiots as well, on top of everything else. But why do you not think that, say, at primary school and at high school, they do not teach you these sort of skills to go forward?
I mean, fundamentally, because they need, the teachers are fundamentally doing it because they want them to get good results, want the school to get good results in exams so that they are more attractive for students to attend. Some of them are obviously fee-paying schools. They want to attract more money, you know, more students who pay big fees, especially the big private schools. Even for comprehensives in Britain and primary schools and secondary schools in Ireland, it helps their reputation. It helps them gain students, you know, helps them gain funding from the state, all these different things, you know, that are just the basic day-to-day stuff. Beyond that, one of the videos we'll post at the bottom of the podcast is of Chomsky talking, I think back in the 70s or 80s, and saying, you know, fundamentally schools and universities, he said it takes until graduate level of university, are about indoctrination. And I suppose on some, and weeding out kind of troublemakers. And to some extent, that must be part of it. Certainly was part of it back in the day. I mean, I was reading about the school system that was first installed in the Highlands in Scotland. And that was wholly to install the English language, to install an Anglican Church of England, or a kind of form of Protestantism, to try and remove what had existed there before, which is mostly a Catholic church, kind of underground Catholic church. So, I mean, clearly that was, the education system there was wholly about indoctrination. Same over here. There was back in the 18th century, the first schools were charter schools. They were wholly about indoctrinating people, again, to speak English and to be Protestant. As you go into the 20th century, again, different forms of indoctrination, preparing people for life as a wage slave, so preparing people for life as a worker. They weren't educating kids from working class backgrounds because they wanted to. They did it because they had to have a basic level of competency to do their job, the jobs that were coming up to them. Same reason why they started bringing in some degree of healthcare, some degree of better housing, is because they couldn't wage any wars. There was a big problem in I think it was the Boer War, where they found that like somewhere in the region of half of their potential conscripts were too ill, too sickly to actually serve. And there was a big worry that there would be no wars in the future against big European powers because they couldn't afford it. Or rather, because their population were just too sick and too downtrodden. So, yeah, I think primarily education was, modern education was brought in for the majority of the population to bring about some basic competency to allow them to do the jobs that the ruling elite needed them to do. And in the present, it would be an act of ridiculous optimism to imagine that that wasn't behind some of it. And certainly the fact that kids who are bored by certain rote learning, who probably have that part of them that wants to think differently, are punished for that and are weeded out of the system, you know? So, yeah, I mean, on some level, it's still about indoctrination because that's almost what it's almost always been about, you know?
Yeah, for sure. And this is true of all of Western Europe and America. I'm very positive in that fact. There was a study in 2006 that said that 66% of Americans that had been asked in this test to find Iraq on a map couldn't find it, despite the fact that all the countries' names were on the map as well. So what that tells you is they weren't even, one, they didn't know where it was, and that's like, hey, that's fine. But then they didn't even have the ability to, or want to look at the map for long enough to actually answer the question. And that, to have that over 50% shows you that you have a very weird and a very sick society, that for a test that doesn't even really mean that much, they can't even be arsed to put in the effort to point at Iraq on a map. That's how little they'd like to think of it. Yes, Alex.
Yeah, and there was something that came to mind there was the kind of radical educationalist, I think his name was Francis Ferrier, I think he was a Catalan socialist, basically. I don't think he was quite an anarchist yet. But he kind of came up with some of the first schools that kind of were trying to educate people and to think critically and think rationally without this kind of the system of exams, without the system of kind of rote learning. And when he attempted this in the late 19th century, he was classed as basically a heretic, as a danger to Spanish society. And he was eventually put on trumped up charges of, I think, of treason or of attempted subversion. He was murdered by the state, the Spanish state, because he was that much of a threat. And those types of schools were for a very long time seen as probably the greatest danger. out there. And even in the 60s and 70s, the American state were of the belief that the universities were a kind of a breeding ground for radical ideas, because so many students in the 60s and 70s had come out against the Vietnam War. Now, you know, for people who experienced that, and people like Chomsky were there in MIT in the 60s, it's anything from the truth. It was only a minority of students that ever got involved in the anti-war movement. This huge, much more of an anti-conscription movement, really, than an anti-war movement. But anyway, the point is that I think the problem with schooling, since it's kind of, is at its best, it's about getting kids prepared for an exam. And in Ireland, that's very much what it is. Everyone from age 12 to age 18 is preparing for the Leaving Cert. And the Leaving Cert is just rote learning. And even if most of the teachers have the best intentions, even if the, you know, education ministers have the best of intentions, it's a system that kind of indoctrinates you into receiving information, not critically thinking about it at all. In fact, if you do, you'll be punished, either in your exam or by your teacher. And then by spewing it out. And that's a system of effective indoctrination and creating automatons, not creating people who have the ability to exist in a world which expects you to do the hard lifting yourself, you know?
It should be said as well that the cultural war that we're sort of in the midst of now was very much set up in the 60s to combat basically what we've seen is some people getting above their station, and we're still basically in the end game of this, you know, 60-year long culture war that basically has nothing to do with anything anymore, but it allows someone like Brendan O'Neill to churn out thousands of articles per year that say nothing and mean nothing. And this is, you know, this leads us into the next question, because if you have a whole, you know, the vast majority of your population that are not taught how to deal with information in any real meaningful way, and you have something like the internet, which can be a great resource if you know how to utilize it, but if you're just some boomer on Facebook, just flipping through it, you know, while you're on the can, you're just getting bombarded with, you know, a whole bunch of information left, right, and center. And through no fault of your own, really, you don't really know how to assess this information and how true it is or how effective it is. And to some extent, a lot of them are not even interested in doing that and would rather just go with the information that backs up the prejudices that they have for any reason. And then this is how you end up in a situation where, you know, the media is not trusted, rightly so. So they know there's something wrong in that aspect, but they don't know or are not too interested in going or finding the information that, you know, gives you a fairer or more critical aspect of what is happening. So what happens with the results then if you don't have these, you know, these factual based thinking skills?
Just look around the world. I mean, I think it's kind of a softball question in many ways, because anyone who has a pulse can look around the world and see what the results of that are. I think you kind of have to separate it out a bit as well. I mean, there are certain countries that are worse than others. Ireland certainly would have its problems in that field. Britain has enormous problems, and America, as we've been kind of hinting towards, is the biggest sufferer of this legacy of not teaching people how to think rather than what they what information they should know. So I mean, looking at America, the proliferation of kind of religious political cults, militias, the alternative world that has been created, and it's been created over the last, I suppose, 30 years, some degree because of Murdoch and the Fox network, but it probably predated that, to be honest with you. The cults are not recent. You know, you can go back to the 1920s, 1930s and find kind of the religious revivalist cults are already emerging. And it's because they don't know. So again, you kind of receive information uncritically. So someone comes along like Alex Jones, or someone comes along like Glenn Beck, someone comes along, like, name a person, there's so many of them, it doesn't really matter, and they present you with information, you don't look at it critically, and if it provides you with a sense of, provides you with a solution of sorts for why your life is shit, you're likely to believe it and not to kind of question it, and then you start going, becoming part of a tribe, a group who think like you, and then you're even more likely to not question it. So, I mean, I suppose the most obvious of all of these now is the QAnon, which I mentioned earlier. I mean, it's so batshit as to be comical if it wasn't just so fucking terrifying how many people kind of think like that. I mean, you know, we have no great love for the Democratic Party, no great love for any political party, really, and certainly not for the Clintons, who are, you know, who, the husband, you know, somebody who had very, very close dealings with Jeffrey Epstein, who was our former running joke on this podcast in season one. And Hillary Clinton, obviously, is a warmonger, certainly when she was the Secretary of State was. But to pretend that there is a kind of cabal of pedophile cannibals who, to some degree, apparently were based out of a pizza place, and that Donald Trump, a noted, noted rapist and noted kind of sexual assaulter, is somehow the Messiah, is just so detached from reality. It just kind of furthers the point, which is that if you make people's lives fundamentally horrible, you open up a space for crackpots, for people deranged, really, really sick sociopaths, to provide people with a new reality, a new universe. And they won't, because you've taught them not to think critically and not to think rationally, they won't. And they'll lap it up, and it'll provide them with the type of catharsis that they need, and the focus they need. And they will not be, once they've bought into that, they won't be easily swayed from that way of thinking. You can't then, you know, as the American media does, kind of display all these facts and then wonder why they don't care, because you've taught them not to care about facts. You've taught them not to think critically, and so they're not going to think critically. And in Britain, to some degree, you know, combination of legacy of empire and also just the complete underfunding of education, underfunding of communities, the destruction Thatcher wrought in the 1980s, and Tony Blair did as well, has created somewhat of a similar thing, where people don't have the ability, or a lot of people don't have the ability, to look at things critically, while at the same time their media is telling them things that are palpably false. I mean, how can you say to people, you know, oh, don't vote for Brexit, but, you know, immigrants aren't the problem, which they're not, but, you know, immigrants aren't the problem, while at the same time telling people, oh, you don't have a problem, our GDP makes us the fifth wealthiest country in the world, and just ignore the fact that your entire shop front is hollowed out, that your son has no job and no job prospects and is on drugs and has a life expectancy worse than his grandparents. You know, that cognitive dissonance will be filled by somebody. And as I said, you know, if you don't teach people to be critical in the information that comes into their view, then they'll just go along with whatever crackpot comes along, whether it be Farage or whether it be, I suppose, Donald Trump.
Yeah, it's very much a case that the elites have created the situation of their own downfall, where, you know, because they operate completely in lying, you know, if you look at the Tory party for the past 20 years, they just haven't had anything resembling the truth coming out of the press credentials for a long time now. And they have a client media that is happy to back this up. And so once you've spent your entire time basically in this like magical land where it was somehow Labour's fault for creating the situation where the banks fell over, or, you know, say in Ireland, like somehow no matter what happens in Ireland, it's somehow Sinn Féin's fault, despite the fact that they've never been in power at any point in the entire of the history of this country. But somehow everything, like, you know, the water charges are coming back, somehow, you know, be brought around to, well, you know, it's the way that Sinn Féin talk about the water charges. So if you have this, you know, where the what you would say the mainstream effectively are, you know, consistently lying and living in a fantasy world, that means that they don't have any ability to combat the other fantasy world that then undermines their power base, because they too haven't got the resources to actually fight it with. All they can do is just like effectively just lie to each other and hope that one lie outdoes the other. It's effectively, you know, like they're basically just playing Yu-Gi-Oh! But, you know, the problem is that the world at stake, not, you know, some shiny card. So what do you think that can be done as we're going forward into, you know, this is quite likely not the last pandemic we'll live through in one shape or another. We've got a huge economic crisis on the horizon, if it hasn't already started. And that, you know, that's not to mention the way that climate change and chaos is going to, you know, kick up these things. So there's going to be a lot of misinformation coming from, you know, both the right and the far right, who basically, you know, between the both of them control all of the media at the moment, about 99% of it, I would say. What can be done to ensure that, you know, we can get their hands off the reins a little bit?
I mean, the cynic, not even the cynic, the most, the logical part of my brain says come up with a better magical world. I mean, sounds simplistic, but I mean, I don't think suddenly coming to people and going, okay, this is how you think critically is going to work, because that's a lifetime's journey. I mean, you don't just suddenly go, oh, okay, that's how you do that, I'll start doing that. And already this concept of alternative facts has been around for a while now. So, I mean, I don't think that's going to work. I think if you come at it from the perspective of, you know, some of these cults, you know, I mean, all cults are self-destructive and collapse to some degree because of their own contradictions. And I don't need to go into some of the great documentaries you can find online of cults, whether it be Jonestown, whether it be the Rajneeshis up in Portland, in Oregon in America, or whether it be, you know, the Catholic Church in Ireland. To some degree, they all kind of collapse of their own contradictions. So, I mean, you know, something will replace them as well, because people are gullible. A lot of people are gullible, or as I said earlier, are rubes. So, I mean, I don't think that kind of trying to come at it from in the short term, from here's how you learn, think critically about ideas is a good idea. I think you have to come up with something that's better, a better story, really. Hopefully one that's more grounded in reality. I mean, people who listen to this who might not be anarchists, who might not know much about it, might be of the opinion that, you know, anarchism, some version of decentralized socialism, communal socialism, is as ruthless, R-O-O-T, as some of these cults we're talking about. But in fact, you know, most anarchists I know would have a fairly realistic view of the likelihood of our ideas coming to fruition, certainly in the short term. And we'd have a fairly realistic view of, I don't want to use the phrase human nature because it's become overused, but certainly of people's limitations, people's biases, you know. And I think when we talk about these ideas, it's not, or at least not my case, talking about them with the idea that they're a utopia. I just think it would be a much better idea to give power to people. I think a lot of these cults and kind of these ideas that are being born of kind of magical thinking are actually rooted in people's feelings of powerlessness, and the kind of ideas give them a sense of power. Okay, I can understand the world. But if you actually give people real authority over their lives, I think that actually will alleviate a lot of these problems. Because again, those cults, the people who kind of spread these magical ideas, they don't have any intention of giving normal people, the 99% of the population who aren't wealthy and powerful, any type of power. In the same way that the Bolsheviks, when they took over in Russia, they had no intention of giving the mob power. I mean, there's very few ideologies other than anarchism which, you know, are kind of designed to, you know, primarily to give people power. All of them say, oh, we're going to liberate the people, but we need a special cadre of of revolutionaries to do it, or we need the Aryan race, you know, led by the Nazi party to do it or whatever. But I think, and in those circumstances, the type of hierarchical leadership will perpetuate the cult-like ideas and the magical thinking, but give people power over their lives, literal power over their lives and their communities. And yeah, it might be bumpy, but it does force one to deal with day-to-day realities. You know, you can be magical Mike, thinking of crazy, stupid ideas and being rubed sideways when you don't have any power and you don't have to deal with the reality of what day-to-day life and, you know, running of a community is. Give people power over their lives and over their community's democratic control, and people can ground themselves in something. They don't give them any power, and they have to retreat into a kind of a servile magical land, which they have. So I suppose my way of putting it would be, you know, more democracy now is about the only thing I can think of to solve this, you know, and coming up with a better story to get there in the short term, you know.
I think it should be said as well, even though we're talking about this, by no means are we saying that we are perfect and we've, you know, we don't fall into the traps of not thinking about things critically as well, because, you know, as anarchists and leftists, we have our own biases. And I think what goes a long way to helping is, one, to know, you know, your limitations and that you're going to get things wrong, and not to get too embarrassed about that, because I think where a lot of the doubling down on like completely spurious bullshit is because people don't like to be made out to look stupid. And it's, you know, a fine tactic to wind someone up on Twitter, because, you know, you're not going to change someone's mind on Twitter. But, you know, you can change someone's mind down at the pub, or, you know, on the picket line, or, you know, in the cafeteria or something like that, because, you know, you've got some sort of basis with someone to be working from, that you're at work. But too often people are, you know, instead of actually like listening to what the other person is saying, is, you know, the automatic setting is ridicule. And hey, listen, I understand that as much as anyone else. But, you know, me and Alex are wrong all the time, but we know that. And we, you know, you try and get better at it. You know, as new information comes out, or, you know, you reassess other things that come through. And it is just like this constant journey. I think for some other people as well, they're not too interested in doing that, because I think part of the reason that, you know, we're both have this aspect is because we're so interested in history. And, you know, you can't be that, you know, in your case, you're an actual historian, but, you know, as me, someone that is probably at this point bumping along close to something like an amateur historian, you can't just read one book by, you know, that's on the Watterson's bestsellers list and then read through that and go, right, that's me, I'm sorted, that I've learned everything I need to know about the, you know, the Greco-Persian wars. You have to consistently be rereading stuff, you know, disseminating it, reading things that are counteractive to it. New information comes out, new ways of looking things about it. And so, you know, but we quite enjoy that process of, you know, looking at things from a different view, because it's, you know, we get enjoyment out of doing that. And more people do, I think, would enjoy that if they're actually given the opportunity. Hang on, Alex. Yeah.
No, I think just you hit on something there kind of in passing. I think the internet, and I use that kind of in a broad sense, well, not in a broad sense, in a specific sense of kind of social media, has really badly hurt one's ability to be wrong and to be accepting in a way you would have been in the past when you were a kid, say. We were old enough now to be, when we were kids, the internet was really not it was a thing, but I wasn't on it anyway. You could make mistakes, and you were just like, oh, okay, was there some mistake, and that's fine. Or when you're a kid, you might have been a bit grumpy or tantrumy about it, but, you know, you got over it, and you were like, okay, well, that's that. I think now it's much more difficult to be wrong, or because you're going to be, you know, you're going to be quote destroyed or owned, and there's just this, and it becomes almost a kind of a thing you want to avoid at all costs. You become like Trump, basically. You retreat into a kind of a narcissistic delusion to try and prevent yourself from being owned or being destroyed. It becomes this like existential thing, whereas in fact, the best thing that can happen to you is to be wrong and to learn from your mistakes. I mean, that's the only way you kind of improve as a person. And it's probably not surprising we're to some degree in this situation. If you can't do that, if the internet or, you know, the type of brutal ownage that comes with being wrong online, I mean, and the left is really kind of, it should hang its head in shame to some degree in being part of the creation of that online. And again, there are, you know, lots of people are more responsible than others, but there's just unwillingness, you know. I mean, there was a book written by John Ronson back in 2015, which was about kind of online shaming. And that's, I mean, let's put our hands up. That's kind of heavily the left online that did that. And so it's not surprising if you're being shamed and if you're being called out and you're, all these things are happening with you, that you're going to ignore that and you're not going to learn from your mistakes. And you're just going to have a moral or some form of righteousness anyway. So I think in many ways, it's part of the kind of destruction of critical thinking or learning from one's mistakes and coming up with a more logical kind of view of the world and your own problems is that we can't do the fundamental thing that allows us to do that anymore. Would you agree?
Yeah, exactly. But what I mean, what I was also getting at is, you know, like some people enjoy the process and other people don't. And I think, you know, when you're talking to people, sometimes, you know, people, I'm not saying all of them, but, you know, like you'll be at a party and someone that maybe, you know, for whatever reason, because of their circumstances, didn't get to university and they're interested in stuff, but, you know, they're fucking working all the time and they haven't really had that time to get into it. They're definitely interested in the world. And there's just a sense of frustration there because they don't know how to get the information that they want to. And what we were given by, you know, in my case, it was given to me by my dad at high school because, you know, I was clearly interested in stuff. And he taught me, you know, how to go down to the library and look for the, you know, the books that you want to, and how, you know, to look at a book and go, oh, I can tell this is always almost exactly bollocks right away because it's usually got David Starkey written on it or something like that. And, you know, from there, like once you give someone the ability to actually learn for themselves, that's it. That's your job done. But school works completely counterintuitive to that. And so these people, you know, are interested in the world, interested in politics or history or the economy, but there's such a wealth of information out there. They don't even know where to start and how to get dug in. And, you know, especially since a lot of these things tend to be very exclusionary in their language, for, you know, sometimes for reasons that it's, you know, if you're stuck into it, it's a lot easier to just use the terms that are there because, you know, that's how you think. But also, you know, a lot of the time it's to just to keep the plebs out from understanding what you're trying to say. And so, yeah, that just causes them to recede into themselves. And so let's say, like, that's how someone like Joe Rogan has so much power at the moment, because what he does is he has guests on that are, you know, of various shades. Most of them are complete fucking bollocks. But, you know, he has some, you know, sensible people on with good politics. But he doesn't have the ability to call out people on their bullshit, and nor does he have the interest in it. But he lets people just witter away and talk about their bullshit that they're going to be talking to about if it's like Peterson or, you know, if it's some cunt that's talking about how the pyramids are, you know, were signals to the aliens or whatever shite that he's got on that week. But that's interesting. And so if you're some fucking guy from Wester Hills that is, you know, like been interested in the pyramids for your whole life, but has, you know, never got around to picking up a book in it, and the only documentary you saw was on the fucking National Geographic, like, you know, you haven't got that information to work from to know why that's clearly nonsense.
Another point, which is kind of goes back to your last question about what could be done, is to look back at what has happened with similar kind of flights of fancy and magical thinking in the past. So the most obvious, and I almost don't even want to bring it up because it's so overused, is the kind of the rise of fascism as a kind of alternative worldview, the kind of the complete bollocks idea that there was this global conspiracy of the Bolsheviks in USSR, Jewish bankers and the Masonics, you know, the Freemasons. But, you know, it was a ridiculous, batshit crazy idea, divorced completely from reality. But it gained enormous prominence in, obviously, in Germany and Austria, but beyond that in other parts of Europe that were even not under Nazi rule or under fascist rule. Even places in Britain, large amounts of the kind of the bourgeois believed kind of to some degree that it was a kind of Jewish conspiracy. And there is still today. I mean, some people still believe that. The only thing you can do with that, other than obviously have a world war, is basically to try and, again, assuming you don't have to have war with the people who believe these things, is to try and create a world where those things are just sidelined sidelined things, you know, that you remember back in the 90s, kind of obsession with aliens, etc. Something that, you know, a couple of freaks like Alex Jones in the 90s believed, and it wasn't particularly a dangerous thing because it wasn't anywhere near power or anywhere near really what the majority of people's opinions were. Because if people have a solid, stable life where they have, they know they're not going to be starving if they don't have a week of work, you know, they have a house, they have healthcare, et cetera, et cetera. These things don't, historically speaking, have a huge amount of traction, at least not anywhere near power. And I think really the emergence of this conversation, why, you know, about thinking critically, really only comes when the elites, and in the case of, you know, the fascists, it was Germany, the German elites and the Italian elites. In the case of what's going on now, it's the American elites, British elites, etc. When they become so divorced and so sociopathic in their views of the poor and in their views of how wealth should be distributed, that they really just, as you said before, create their own worldview, which is almost as detached as some of the fascist ideas. And their view being that basically you can cut taxes forever, you can destroy and hollow out any type of welfare state that might have existed at one point, and there'll be no repercussions, you know, or that the economy will be fine, or it'll be good, it'll be the best for everybody, you know. Basically, if you're Ayn Rand, you know, you hold those views, you're either, you know, might need to go to see a psychiatrist, or you're so wealthy and detached from reality that you're suffering from magical thinking too. So that was something that was brought up earlier. But I think, yeah, the only real response to it is to try and improve people's day-to-day life. And that, you know, you don't even necessarily need to have an anarchist community to do that. You just need to make sure people's lives are better. And that's something you could probably find a majority of people would agree with, even people who don't see themselves as anarchists or socialists. Who can understand that idea, you know? I don't, not to try and wrap a bow on this episode, but I think if anything, you know, that's what history has proven. It certainly was the case back in with the Jacobites, in Ireland anyway, there was a belief that, you know, the Stuarts were like this messiah for the Gaelic community, which was ridiculous because they were neither Gaelic nor, you know, particularly messiah-like. And it was only really, you know, through a century plus of them doing jack shit and improvements happening elsewhere in Ireland and attention going elsewhere, that, you know, those that kind of crazy magical thinking of the Stuarts as messiahs disappeared, you know?
I mean, it makes sense though, because I think a lot of this is born from frustration. I saw, by no want of my own, I saw a David Icke video, and it was kind of a bit of an eye opener in some sense, because it was like, what, 20 minutes long? And the first 18 minutes was actually pretty much spot on. He was talking about, you know, how the government make wars and send the poor off to die in them. And like, this is the, you know, like they orchestrate these wars and, you know, they make money from it. The gun companies make money from it. And you're like, hey, look, you know, and the audience are just like, yeah, actually, I'm really into this. I'm getting, you know. And I don't know where it was, but it was somewhere in the UK. I might be in like, you know, Brighton Town Hall or something. You know, there's like 400, 500 people in there. And then he's taking them on this journey with stuff that's all like fairly accurate, and then flips it and is like, and that's why 9/11 was an inside job. And so what he's done is, you know, he's got the basis of something that is correct and then uses that as a jumping off point into some complete fucking spurious bullshit. But the only reason he was able to take people that far is because of the fucking frustration that they feel in their day-to-day lives. The reason that, you know, and I've said this on the podcast before, that Nigel Farage is the most effective politician that we've seen in our lifetime. He hasn't had a seat in Britain. He rarely took his seat in the European Union, but has yet pulled the Overton Windon so far to the right, you know, have such a huge effect to make something like Brexit happen, is because he knows how to play in people's frustrations.
Yeah, I mean, that almost in essence is the kind of conclusion of this episode, really, is that critical thinking is important, but far more important maybe is people's day-to-day living standards. And because, again, you can survive in a society which, or a society that doesn't think critically, or large amounts of people don't think critically, can survive provided that whoever has power has some degree of, I suppose, empathy for the majority of the population. When they don't, when there's this greed and sociopathic tendencies take over, then, you know, the lack of critical thinking, as we said earlier in the podcast, will start beneficiating crackpots and fascists who come along to fill that void and explain why your life is being shit, you know? Yeah, so, I mean, the answers to that are self-evident, which is, you know, cut off the heads of the wealthy, and or even better, strap them up on a rope and hit them with sticks like a piñata. And when all the gold falls out, we'll all be happier. And then we won't be listening to crackpots.
Crackpots like this podcast?
I'm pulling my collar.
So, yeah, that's the end of the episode anyhow. Thanks for listening. I know we didn't really give, if you were coming to this podcast and hoping on a manual of how to do some good factual-based thinking, we did not do that for you. But we will be doing an episode on the British press at some point, and I'm sure within that will contain pretty much my entire degree or what I can remember of it in that. So look out for that one if you're interested in learning how to spot the bullshit and what might be true in the Daily Mail.
Also, James, if you look at the if the listeners will look at the bottom of the podcast, there's links there for basically more in-depth documentaries, podcasts about how you can learn to spot things better. This podcast obviously is limited in its time frame, but do have a look down there if you're really interested and you learn more.
So all it's left to say is it's goodbye from Alex.
And it's goodbye from him.
And yeah, like and share, subscribe. We're more interested in you sending this to your enemies, because all we want to do is ruin Melt's days. So don't share it with your friends. They're too cool.
And always fuck Oshane.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.